nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello, good evening to you listening to Nationwide, and my name is Sunny Martin. We are coming to you live from Juba this evening. Today we are going to be looking at the listing process for South Sudan's migration landscape for them to join the World Heritage. And that's what we are going to be discussing right this evening, and our lines will be open to you where you can call on 0912062079 or 0912062950, or you can send us your question to our SMS number 0912177141. UNESCO is currently conducting a consultation process for a World Heritage listing for South Sudan in Boma Badingilo landscape. The consultation are taking place here in Juba at the headquarters, and it aims at developing an action plan and roadmap for the nomination. Since South Sudan's ratification of the UNESCO World Heritage Convention in March 2016, UNESCO has been working closely with the government of South Sudan to support the development of this tentative list of a potential World Heritage site in the country. So, is South Sudan anywhere closer to finalizing its World Heritage tentative list or the final list? These are some of the questions we are going to be putting to my three guests here in the studio, as we will be hearing more from them. I am joined in the studio by Bechu Thomas, who is the National Program Officer for Culture and in UNESCO. Good evening and welcome to Radio Mirai.
Thank you, Sunny. Good evening.
And also, I have two consultants who joins me right here in the studio this evening. We have Pascal Toravinga and Zulu John. You are all most welcome, Pascal and John.
Good evening. Thank you so much for welcoming us.
Thank you so much. Good evening.
Okay. First of all, let's begin with Bechu. This consultation happening here in Juba, could you explain more about it to our listeners?
Thank you very much, Sunny Martin, for this opportunity. We are grateful that we are able to reach to our public regarding these processes. As South Sudan ratified the 1972 convention, and it went further to enlist three sites into the tentative list of UNESCO, that is Boma Badingilo Migratory Landscape and the Sut Wetland and Denzibere Slave Route site. With this consultation today, we wanted to go step by step to ensure that at least that one is represented for South Sudan. So these consultations will have happened, I must say, 50 years ago. The World Heritage Convention is now over 50 years. So our site, the Boma Badingilo Migratory Landscape, is one of the richest ones. So the consultants are here to talk to the stakeholders in South Sudan, because it is important that it is the property of the people that they need to talk to them. So they are here to talk to the people and see what is the way forward, what is the plan, what is the roadmap that they could achieve to have a World Heritage for South Sudan.
Okay, before we hear from John and Pascal, but we're still with you, could you explain in a simple term to our listeners when you talk about World Heritage site, what does it mean for South Sudan? What are we talking about here?
Many of us talk about South Sudan has a very rich culture. South Sudan has a very rich heritage. When we talk about heritage, we mean, it is in our own simple term, is that it could be the intangible that we cannot touch. Is about the skill that we use to pass the knowledge of this heritage to our future one. But again, the tangible ones are things like national parks, things like mountain, things like building that has stayed for visit. But what is important to make it a heritage is that it has a character that is so outstanding that it's not only for South Sudan, but
very unique.
Very unique. It has a very unique characteristic that globally could be recognized as one that someone even outside South Sudan could talk about it.
Okay. Yes, as a consultant, Pascal, let's begin with you. What is happening so far? Who are you meeting? and what do you want to achieve, and how long is the consultation?
Thank you very much. Our assignment in South Sudan, we are working with UNESCO. We are field experts on the implementation of the 1972 Convention on the Protection of Cultural and Natural Heritage. And this mission, we are meeting stakeholders from government departments, institutions that are responsible for managing cultural and natural heritage, representatives of communities, NGOs. So implementing UNESCO conventions, including this one, the 1972, it's an inclusive process where we have to consult and engage all stakeholders that are interested and affected by the process of the listing. So the outcome that we're looking for is specific for Boma National Park, which is already on the tentative list of the state part of South Sudan. We would like to push this process towards ensuring that South Sudan has the first World Heritage Site recorded. South Sudan is one of the 11 countries in Africa that don't have a World Heritage Site in their national boundaries. So this is a priority for UNESCO, and this is a priority for Africa, and this is a priority for the whole world. So that's what we are doing. We are meeting inclusive stakeholders in the process to make sure that everybody understands what is going to happen, how it's going to happen from the beginning, and we carry the process forward. Thank you.
Okay, and Zulu, if South Sudan happens to come out from the 11 countries in Africa which is not registered, what significant benefit do South Sudan stand to gain?
Thank you so much for the question. We need to realize that World Heritage Sites, first and foremost, it's a pride of the people. It's where now the identity of the people of South Sudan will be more or less like highly uplifted up. It's where now we are showing the world to say, look, this is what we have as a people of Sudan. Now, this ranges actually from the different cultures, practices, belief systems, and also looking at the lifestyle of the people. And thereon, again, we can now add these natural fabrics, such as, you know, the wildlife, the mountains, the rivers. And so this is actually what we are trying to fly up there. And so this is actually what is embedded in the fabric of a World Heritage Site. And so out there, what people would like to see is how do people of Sudan, you know, cherish, you know, what they have in them, which is actually critical. And so there are benefits which will be there, is that there are quite a lot of benefits, but one of them is that of international recognition. It's where people will be able to see. Secondly, it's that of local. People will be able to, actually the locals themselves will be able to see and take pride in what they have. And thirdly, I should mention, is that also generally as a region as well, we'll be able to benefit, because we'll be able to say this is what Africa now has as one of those sites that is enlisted on the World Heritage List.
Mm-hmm. And what is required of South Sudan right now, as UNESCO is trying to support this process of listing? What is required from South Sudan? Maybe Bechu, you can come in.
Okay, thank you very much. Putting a site into the tentative list is not the end. It requires a process to ensure to move it further into to become a World Heritage Site. One important component that requires from South Sudan is, first of all, to consult with the people who are going to be the beneficiaries of this site, let's say the communities. When we talk about Boma Badingilo migratory landscape, we know this site, these parks are where there are communities inside the parks and outside the parks. For this site to become, to be nominated as a World Heritage, then we must talk to the community. It's not UNESCO, but I think the stakeholders who are spearheading this, let's say the Ministry of Wildlife, Interface Ministry like Minister of Culture, be able to go down. The stakeholders like communities are very important to be talked to. And for this site to be really on the list, again, it requires legal protection. the legal protection it requires that this site is protected. I just wanted to open this that between the two sites, there is a vast migratory corridor. This site is not protected. It requires that it requires protection status. The boundaries between these areas, these two national parks, has to be defined for that matter. And there are things that requires that South Sudan, especially let's say both from the perspective of the national authority, and also what requires that the community must know if this site is to become a World Heritage Site.
And how long will it take South Sudan to be finally having that kind of capacity to be listed and then move out from among the 11 countries in Africa which are not listed? How long is the process?
Okay, as being identified among the 11 countries not having a World Heritage List, from our consultation with them, we have already commitment from the national authorities to move this process as soon as possible. Definitely, we are looking forward. There's not a definite, but I think it will depend on that all these requirements that I mentioned, which I'm sure some other requirements that Pascal and John will mention, this has to be put in place. So it depends on the speed that we wanted to take. Quickly, let's say the site has to be gazetted. We need a gazettement from the site. The government need to quickly say, okay, this area has been gazetted. That is one element. Which doesn't say the bills are in the parliament, this bill is already being passed.
Mm-hmm.
We also wanted to ensure that these two national parks, there are other stakeholders within the national government. Let us say Boma, Badingilo, and then you have Minister of Wildlife. Because of the animal migration, we have the Minister of Culture. Definitely there might be the community who resides there. There might be some important site that cultural that is important for this community. We need to think about the Minister of Environment in that because this is within the environment, who are important stakeholders. We need to talk about the Ministry of Road, the Ministry of Transport, that they are all part of this process. The Ministry, just in case, if at all, the Ministry of Mining, what about we say that a mine is being discovered in that place? So we need to have a stake, because this has to be, at least the idea of this consultation is to bring all this institution together to dialogue, and this will help the process move forward. As I said, from the discussion that we had with the national authority, especially the Ministry of Wildlife, we see very high level of commitment to ensure that this process happens.
Okay, and let's find out more from Pascal. From where Betu have stopped, what exactly is required from the government as a consultant? Because you are the expert, that's why you have been hired to come and do this consultation here in Juba. So what is required? What will it take this country to meet all the requirements needed?
Thank you very much for that question. What is required for having a site inscribed on the World Heritage List is actually outlined in the operational guidelines on the implementation of the 1972 Convention. So UNESCO has a process that has to be followed by the state party. And I think Thomas earlier on highlighted the issue of the tentative listing.
Mm-hmm.
So the site is already on the tentative listing, which is a positive thing, because you cannot nominate a site that is not on the tentative list.
Yeah.
So from there, we then need to develop the nomination file, because the nomination file is what you submit to UNESCO for consideration by the World Heritage Committee. And that nomination file has got two important documents that you have to submit. The first one is called the nomination dossier, which is the document that explains and justifies what is outstanding about Boma and Badingilo,
yes,
a migratory landscape. And in that document, we also justify the boundaries. Why have we chosen those boundaries? and we have also to demonstrate that there's protection and management. By protection, I'm going back to issues raised by Thomas that you have to have legal, formal legal protection. And there's that area that he mentioned between the two parks which needs to be considered by the state pattern.
Yeah.
And then the second document is what we call the management plan. In the management plan, is like your strategic vision or a strategy document for this radio station, where you say, this is the resource that I have, and the resource is located here, and these are issues or challenges that we are seeing, and this is how we are going to mitigate the challenges. And we expect that in 5 years, we would have achieved 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But in that management plan document, what is also important, I'm referring to what John earlier on explained, we have to address the issue of socio-economic benefits that are accruing to communities. Because you cannot have a World Heritage Site or a heritage site that is not benefiting communities. So we have to look at innovative ways, adaptive ways, creative ways of involving and creating these benefits. So those two documents, when they are submitted to UNESCO, they then get evaluated by what are called advisory bodies.
Oh, from UNESCO?
From UNESCO.
Mm-hmm.
And we have these advisory bodies. It's ICOMOS, which is the International Council of Monuments and Sites. It evaluates cultural properties.
Yeah.
And then we have IUCN, which is the International Union of Conservation for Nature. It evaluates natural properties.
So they will have to come down here to South Sudan?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the evaluation process has got three levels. First one, when you submit, then the advisory board is...
These two documents?
Yeah, these two documents.
Mm-hmm.
They then conduct what we call a desktop analysis,
mm-hmm.
where they give those documents to experts in that area to say, we have received these documents. Can you assess what is there, what is missing? And then from that desktop evaluation, they then create terms of reference for field missions that will come on the ground. So once this site that we are talking about, the migratory landscape, is submitted, the state part of South Sudan has to prepare for a field mission by experts from UNESCO and advisory bodies who are coming to verify everything that we have put in that document.
Yes.
So which means everything that we put in any of these two documents, it has to be accurate, it has to be factual.
And verified.
And verified. So we cannot afford to mislead UNESCO.
So where are we now with all this process?
Where
is the country right now?
Where we are now, we are moving the state party from the tentative list
mm-hmm.
to developing these two documents.
So we have the country have not even started developing the nomination dossier and the management plan documents.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the purpose of the consultation, to say, how do we start this process? Who is going to work to develop these two documents that are required, and which one should we start with and why,
mm-hmm.
and what are the resources that are required? Because for us to do this, we need financial resources, because there's going to be a research. Earlier on, you asked it about for how long is it going to take.
Yes, I was going to ask again.
Yes, how long is going to take is dependent on the following factors. First of all, we need to do research to close the gaps of information where we don't know something. Or where, for example, now, which is quite a positive thing, and we understand, and we have read in the media that His Excellency, the President of this,
mm-hmm.
or South Sudan,
yeah.
launched the results of the survey.
Yeah, not long ago.
That's a positive thing, because now that's a research.
You can, the experts can use those for final...
Yes, to say this is what we have,
yeah.
and these are the quantum. So that research, we need to do research for the nomination dossier for the management plan,
mm-hmm.
and that requires resources. And it also requires commitment from the people that are going to be developing these documents. It's not something that you can say, I do once a day. It has to be their lifestyle for the next...
So in this scenario, who are these people to do the commitment? Is it the government, the expert, the UNESCO?
It's the state part.
The consultants?
It's the state part of South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, the convention is ratified by the state party,
yes,
not consultants.
That is South Sudan.
Yes, that's South Sudan. So it's up to the government of South Sudan then to put a team that will be developing these two documents. And we know that there's arrangements for the management of these parks. So there's a management authority. And it is our understanding that that authority will be leading this whole process. But in the process also, I would like to say something that is at the heart of my vision for Africa.
Yeah.
I believe in developing and living capacity in South Sudan, which means we must have national citizens of this country also participating in the process as part of transferring skills. Because at the end of the day, we don't just list the site, but we also have to manage it.
Yeah.
And the site cannot be managed by consultants like us.
Yeah.
It's South Sudanese.
Yeah.
So UNESCO is really looking at ways of making sure that national citizens, they are going to be involved in this process.
Okay.
So you asked a very challenging question where you said, how long is this process is going to take? From our consultations, which is still tentative, everybody is committed to pushing this project as quickly as possible. And there's a tentative thinking that maybe if we work very hard, we should be able to submit the nomination file by 2027.
2027.
Yes. But that requires financial resourcing, that requires teams that are committed,
yes,
and that requires engaging communities right from the beginning so that they are part and parcel of the whole process. We cannot nominate this landscape without involving communities. And that requires also political will from the relevant government departments to support the processes. And for example, the issue that Thomas mentioned, the legal protection, that requires political will to fast track all those things. So at the moment, tentatively, 2027 is the target date. But I must say something.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't submit by, if the state part of South Sudan doesn't submit by 2027, it means we are only going to do it after 2027 because there's a new process or a new step in the process of inscribing a site,
mm-hmm,
that is going to be effective from 2027.
So the earlier the better.
Okay. So that we don't take that additional step and that increases the time.
All right. Yes, Zulu, from your expertise, given those countries that has so far managed to be listed in these World Heritage Sites around the world, what can South Sudan learn from them and make sure that they meet the deadline before beginning a new chapter, like Pascal have just said?
Thank you so much for that question. So first and foremost, what the country of South Sudan can learn is, like the last point which Pascal mentioned, community engagement. It's a very critical point where now South Sudan should be able to engage the community, because this site belongs to the community.
Yeah.
It's for the community. And so it's them actually who should be able to fly the flag of South Sudan up high there.
So they play a very crucial role.
Very crucial role. Because what will happen is, as Pascal mentioned, when now the evaluators come from UNESCO, they come down here, they may even be able to bypass the officers here of Thomas,
mm-hmm,
and go right up there to the community,
mm-hmm,
and ask them to say, we received your nomination. Do you want this site to become a World Heritage Site? Do you know what a World Heritage Site status means?
Mm-hmm.
And so if the community says, yes, we know, and we have been informed, and we are happy that this site should become a World Heritage Site, then that would be a plus.
But
in many instances, and some of the sites that I've been able to evaluate, you find that the communities don't even know. Why? Because it's been done from top down.
Mm-hmm.
And the communities don't know anything. So such becomes problematic. And you find in such cases, UNESCO for designs and say, no, not until the community itself buys in and pushes this. They should be able to be in the driver's seat actually to push this process.
So in this scenario, what is required from South Sudan right now?
So what is required from South Sudan, starting from government, NGOs, UNESCO itself, and other NGOs. It's a matter of actually creating a very, very active program, rigorous program.
Awareness.
Going into the communities, teaching them and telling them the benefits. What does it mean to be World Heritage Site? And also making them realize what they have. They may be there, but they don't know what they have and how pressured it is. Secondly, making them know the benefits of what it means to be on the World Heritage Site, of which its benefits are so innumerous. Okay, because you're talking about socio-economical benefits, you're talking about identity, like I mentioned earlier, and so on and so forth. And so once the community has the buy-in, you'll find that everyone actually will rally. It will be very easy for government, it will be very easy for the NGOs, and it will be also easy for other donors to come in and also put in financial resources, because they are seeing how the community itself wants its property to be declared as a World Heritage Site.
The common language people will understand from you very quickly is, will it be a source of attraction to tourists? That's a simple language you should use here.
Yes. Actually, there is what is known as World Heritage Tourism. These are people who have got, you know, a bucket list where they want to visit different types of World Heritage sites
around the world.
And what we have here in South Sudan, which is very unique, it's the migration. Okay, and it's actually about, you know, the beautiful animals that you have here, which are literally unique, and they are not found anywhere
in the world.
And so people will rally to just come and see these animals.
And when they come, they pay money.
And definitely now, when you talk about the line of beneficiation, you're talking about, one, they'll pay visa to come here, they'll pay the airlines, of which now Sudan will also benefit.
South Sudan.
Once they land here, okay, they have to pay visa. They have to get in a taxi, of which the local people will benefit.
Hotel.
They have to go and get lodge in a hotel, of which they have to go and benefit.
They'll go in the streets.
They will buy local food in the streets.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they'll book now to say, no, we want to go to the park, of which they'll also book. And they'll need accommodation.
Yeah.
And so in all these, you find that there's employment opportunities. A lot of people will be employed. A lot of youths, they'll be employed. And also an opportunity whereby now these youths will be trained in various fields. It could be tourism and management. It could be hospitality. It could be food and beverage. And all these, they will be trained in them, including interpretation, because we need a site manager.
Yeah.
So infrastructure development, it will be there, because we need a kind of a ticket office and an information center. And all those, we need people to be employed in there, and they have to be trained.
So it's a potential activities that can be benefiting the people of South Sudan. And let's find out more from Thomas. This question should have been answered by the government, but since you interact so much with the officials here in South Sudan, given what Zulu and Pascal have said, that much is required from the government right now. There's too much in the government's entry. So from your interaction with them, do you think it's possible? And you are here in Juba. Is it possible to meet the deadline of 2027, given the enormous challenges the country is going through right now? We need money.
Okay, thank you very much for this question. From our discussion, this is not the first conversation that we are having with the government. A year ago, we were able to bring stakeholders together to discuss this issue. I must say there is a lot of appetite that this site must become World Heritage Site. With that level of commitment from that kind of discussion and from just this recent meeting, we hopefully that will mean the 2027 deadline. That is the hope.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. If you have just joined us right now, you're listening to Nationwide. My name is Annie Martin, and I have three guests with me here in the studio. I have two consultants who are here consulting with the government officials and other partners in Juba. We have Zulu John and Pascal Darovinga, and I also have Betu Thomas, who is a national program officer for UNESCO, and our lines are now open. You can call, or you can also send us your question to our SMS number 0912177141, and you can also call us on 0926862 97. Hello, Ladimira. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, your name and where are you calling from?
Connected with some senator here in Juba.
Okay, Matian, go ahead.
Yeah, I greet the in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course, our people always need something that need a lot of support. Don't apply the effort. And this is what go to our politicians in the country. Because this thing is a good thing. By the way, it benefits the people in the country. Don't think our people will implement it. So my question is, after this one success, what will community achieve on it? The benefit that will community get? So this is my question.
Okay. Hello? Hello? Yes, your name?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening, D, and good evening to the guests who are there in the studio.
Your name and where are you calling from?
Tofuk from Nazarbargazan.
Okay, go ahead from Awil.
Yeah, I'm very grateful to meet you through on air.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy to have the good news from the guests who are there in the studio with you. I appreciate the topic that we are discussing on now. لو انت يعني عندك يعني ايمان خليك يدك كون فوق لانه علينا الجنوبين قاعدين نتكلم بالكشم ويد بتاعنا ما في شغل وده يعني ده كاب ما في نتيجه للجنوبين
اوكي
نتيجه لو علينا نتكلم حاجه كده
نتيجه يكون في اوكي شكرا كارلس ما سؤالتك وي هاف some other questions coming in here via our SMS number. This one is coming from Dennis in Juba, and Dennis says, thanks to the two consultants in the studio plus this program officer of UNESCO, he want to find out from you what will be the crucial role of people living around these sites to protect and maintain security around the area, given our challenges in South Sudan. That's from Dennis. Another question here is coming from Deng in Juba, and Deng says, what were the criteria used to select these two sites, and are there any other potential sites in the country that can be also included in the list? Why only two? Yes, maybe anyone can take this.
Thank you so much. I would like to start with the first speaker.
Yes.
Who asked a question around what will community get?
Yeah, the benefit.
The benefits.
That's Matiang.
Yes, and also link it with the third, the question that came through the SMS.
Mm-hmm.
What is the role of people?
In the community around there.
Yes. There's one thing that is often underestimated about local communities. Local communities are creators of heritage. They create the heritage, and they have a long history of interacting with nature and their environment. And that knowledge is embodied in their cultural traditions and practices. So when you look at these two landscapes that are proposed for inscription, you cannot discuss their future and their conservation without tapping into the knowledge that these local communities hold. They know what is happening with the ecosystem. They know which plant is of medicinal value. They know which plant is edible and which one is not edible. So when we look at the benefits, we don't just look at monetary gains, but we are also looking at what is it that the community is going to bring into the sustainable conservation of the landscape. So I believe that with the World Heritage Listing and by engaging the local communities and the researching on their indigenous knowledge and traditional knowledge on the landscape, they will contribute to the conservation of the property. And, for example, if you look at the moment, we already have communities that are living within and around the parks, and they're actually already contributing to this conservation.
Yeah.
So that's one benefit that is very important, because as part of World Heritage Listing, one of the expectations is that the state party, together with the stakeholders and the local communities, they will be able to retain the outstanding universal value of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot do that without the communities. So what we expect is that the state party is going to have governance structures that will include communities in the decision-making processes of conservation in these properties. So there's that element. And I'd like my colleague to talk about the socioeconomic benefits and the rest.
Yeah, and also, what were the criteria used to come up with these two, and are there any other potential areas in the country that can be also identified and listed?
Yes. So when it comes to the criteria, earlier on I spoke about the operational guidelines on the implementation of the 1972 Convention.
Yeah.
The Convention and the operational guidelines, they provide the criteria which is supposed to be met by any proposed site so that it can be considered as illustrating outstanding universal value. And outstanding universal value, like what you said earlier when we were having a discussion with Thomas,
yeah,
it's something that is exceptional and something that is rare, something that is universal, to the extent that when one sees it, they cannot think of any other place.
Yeah.
For example, if you look at Victoria Falls World Heritage Site, shared by Zimbabwe and Zambia, even if you have never been there, you just see a video, you say, ah,
yeah, I should go there.
This is exceptional. I should go there. So this is the criteria. That criteria is from 1 to 10. So you need to interrogate the criteria and see which criteria applies to your site. So for the tentative listing process done by South Sudan, they looked at this criteria from 1 to 10 and said, we have this site. Which criteria can best justify its placement on the World Heritage List? So the tentative list is actually informed by that criteria.
Okay.
So what I would want to emphasize is that a site like Boma, it has got the migratory landscape, but it doesn't mean that there are no other values within the same landscape. There could be archaeological sites, there could be cultural sites, there could be sites associated with the intangible practices of the local community, but they are not exceptional, they are not outstanding. But it doesn't mean that they are not protected. So for a listing, we are looking for that thing that is exceptional, that is universal. And at management level, we then look at all the values and say, how do we manage the landscape in its totality? There are other sites in South Sudan, and I think UNESCO is really working together with wildlife and the culture sector to identify these sites.
Okay.
So they have to go through this process of sieving to find out what is actually outstanding.
And look at it very critical.
And
yes,
critical.
Yes, John, you want to add something?
Yeah, okay. Let me just start from where Pascal has just ended. It's important, actually. I like the question, but the caller has to understand that it's a long process. Secondly, it's a costly process. Thirdly, this current site that we are looking at, Boma itself and the other side, Park, it's a low-hanging fruit. It's a low-hanging fruit in the sense that already the Ministry of Wildlife and Tourism, they've already done extensive, you know, they've been doing research and they've got actually records to show that they have been managing this site for some time. And so already that is critical. It's something that is already in our hands. It's like a bird that we're holding in our hands. So it's very easy for us.
A bird at hand is better than that in the air.
Exactly. And so despite that, we know that there are other sites which are very beautiful and unique in South Sudan. And so it's one step at a time.
Yeah.
And so once this is actually done, it's easy actually now because capacity will be built in South Sudan. And so people will be able now to nominate and say, okay, fine, this has got the outstanding universal value. And so why not also nominate this to be on the World Heritage List?
Okay. Yes, Thomas, we are almost coming to the end of our discussion. After this consultation happening here in Juba, what next?
Okay, for us, what next is that the first step moving forward is to update the tentative list. We've already done consultation. Now we need to update the tentative because it's a process moving forward.
Mm.
If we're to meet 2027, then we must step up to update the tentative list so that we move that process forward. That is the first step that needs to happen. While doing this, then there should be other processes going on, especially we don't want to take until 2026 or 2027 to consult the community. No. It must start now. Then also engage with the stakeholders, being in the national government, especially in regards to the legal protection, in regards to, let's say, giving status to the corridor, in regards to the management plan. It has to happen. This is a step moving forward. Definitely, all this will help us push it moving quickly.
Okay. And finally, Pascal, people would like to see, like the caller who talked in Arabic is not optimistic because so many promises has been made in this country, there's no result. So people are still doubting. There are so many doubting Thomas's has by the Bible. He referred to the Bible anyway. So now, what people want to see action happening. So after your consultation, then what is going? To whom are you going to hand over your report to UNESCO, to the government, and to who? And what should happen after this consultation is done for the state, that is the South Sudan government, to meet the deadline of 2027?
Thank you so much. From the interministerial consultation that we did yesterday, I can assure the caller that there is commitment from the government. By interministerial, we invited different ministries because the planning and even the provision of security and infrastructure for that property is not a responsibility of one government entity. So I think having that interministerial conversation was quite useful.
Okay.
After the mission, we are drafting a detailed action plan, which will have steps of implementation from step one to step Z, so that there's guidance to the state party.
All right.
And this report is submitted to UNESCO and the state party via UNESCO.
Thank you so much. And John, in 30 seconds, you are concluding remark in 30 seconds.
I have so much hope and trust that the community will be able to buy into this, and this will only be done when there's a joint effort from the ministry and all stakeholders, including NGOs, in order to sensitize the community on the benefits and the importance of declaring this site as a World Heritage Site.
Thank you so much, Zulu John, Pascal Tarubinga, and Bechu Thomas from UNESCO Program Officer. Thank you very much for coming. And the news is coming next at the top of the hour in English at 6 p.m. Join my colleague David Lucan for the second hour of Nationwide. My name is Annie Martin. Stay tuned.